Welcome back inside the collective. It is 8:03 on Tuesday, the 16th of September. Glad you can be with us. Cole Jackson will be here momentarily. This is Jeff Zarebek. I am Bobby Trossett, and we are week three already into this NFL regular season. Of course, Jeff, Ravens get it done. They had to, maybe didn't have to. They stared 0-2 in the face a year ago. We're both old enough to remember that, but they get the bounce back when they needed. It was a convincing one at that. Special teams, defense, Lamar Jackson's arm, and a number of other things, including, whoo boy, what a first half it was going up against that Cleveland defensive front. Some adjustments were made at halftime, and they end up putting their second consecutive 40-plus point performance together. It was 40 week one, 41 in week two. We're going to get into a number of things over the course of the next hour. What we like and didn't like, we're each going to go through it from our perspectives. Overall health statuses entering week three. Jeff, you're going to be helpful on that. And of course, practice gets set tomorrow. So we'll have more coming up next week on that. And just in terms of where Isaiah likely might be trending, Kyle Van Noy's timeline, Jair Alexander, so on and so forth. And then, of course, it's never too early to take a quick sneak peek ahead at what's supposed to be a blockbuster game if it lives up to the expectations. And that is Ravens-Lions under the primetime lights in Baltimore, 6 days from now, coming up at the bank. But Jeff, I would love to get your opening thoughts on a game where you could go in a bunch of different ways, right?
You could rejoice in
the bounce back effort that was made. And then you can also maybe take the pessimistic approach and realize that that's probably an opponent that's going to be picking in the top five come April.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of those can't win games. If you're the Ravens, you blow them out and it's like big whoop. That's what you should have done. You struggle and it's, wow, maybe this team isn't as good as we thought it was. So, you know, they did what they had to do. They handled business. They took care of business. I know the big word last week was maturity after both Marlon Humphrey and John Harbaugh basically said that the defense lacked maturity. Yeah. And I think it was a mature performance, right? And I say that because there was so much yapping out of Cleveland, trash talk, complaints about the ceremony, you know, other stuff about wallowing in the Bills loss and this, that, the end of the world, you know, all that. And I just think they put their heads down and went back to work. And I think that was important. It was a mature performance. They took care of business. They didn't get flustered when things weren't going their way offensively in the first half. It's good to see the defense and special teams make some plays. That's kind of what's been lacking in the past when the defense is – when the offense has struggled. It's where's the defense and special teams to pick him up? They picked him up early. All in all, it was a solid performance, the type of performance a potential Super Bowl contender should have against one of the lower tier teams in the league in Cleveland.
And as we welcome in our guy Cole Jackson, Cole, we just gave the rundown obviously of what's coming up over the next hour or so, but you know, 48 hours later, if you will, ish, your thoughts on that week two back, you know, really bounce back performance, call it a couple days later.
Yeah. I mean, there's still some frustrations. There's still some things this team needs to work through, but you know, you got to remember it's week two. It's part of the whole don't peak early thing, right? Like there's going to be some things to work with. I think a lot of the frustration is, you know, around some of the trenches. I feel like every offseason we talk about, all right, we're just going to shore up the O-line, get some edge rushers in here. And I feel like it's been kind of Groundhog Day for the last few off seasons, and it still feels like we're kind of in that part. So there seems to be a lot of frustration coming off a 41 to whatever it was, 17, was it 10, 17, 17. Finish there? Yeah, 17. So, I mean, it was a shellacking, and this is a team that has historically given the Ravens a lot of trouble. You know, it's an AFC North matchup. These aren't gimmies by any means, even when it is a team like the Browns. I think the big thing was, and you kind of nailed it, the defense and the special teams making those explosive plays in lieu of the offense. That's what I felt really good about when I kind of went back through it. I also think we saw some really positives, you know, creating those explosive plays in the air, seeing a guy like DeAndre Hopkins step up, Devontae Walker step up, Tylan Wallace step up, you know, role players stepping up to make the big plays when kind of your stars are getting bogged down, whether it's due to the O-line or whatever it may be. So I thought that was really exciting, you know, kind of an underrated part that I didn't appreciate on game day because I was letting myself get down into negative town a little bit.
Those are some
angry Cole. You look angry tonight.
Oh man! So Amanda's gone she's in Toronto for the week. So I got the girls solo. I coming off a wedding weekend where I'm struggling 48 hours later. And so it's like the worst possible combination of things. Couldn't get my VPN off. I think Scarlett's still awake upstairs. I don't know. If you see a little person come in and tackle me, just
our group message is going off on Saturday. Jeff, needless, we didn't know, right? Unbeknownst to us, that he had already been getting after it.
I know.
On Friday, I believe, in a wedding weekend. I thought it was starting Saturday. No, it had already begun, yeah. Hadn't it there?
Yeah, I'm pregame.
I'm too old for this.
Well, those are some macro thoughts, aside from the last 45 seconds, related to the game itself. And we will, of course, look ahead, like I mentioned, to week three. But before we do, let's kind of go around the horn here, Jeff, starting with you, and dig into some of the micro in terms of what you liked from Sunday against Cleveland.
Yeah, there was a lot of things, and I touched a little on the defensive and special teams contributions. I'll stay in my lane here, let you guys hit on a couple things. But the one thing that's, you know, I removed myself a little bit from the game and looked at the snap counts and all that, the one thing that made an impression on me is there were times on Sunday that on the field at the same time for the Ravens defensively were first-round safety, Malachi Stark, second-round outside linebacker, Mike Green, sixth-round defensive lineman, Aeneas Peebles, fourth-round inside linebacker, Teddy Buchanan, and undrafted cornerback, Kenyon Martin, who played over 20 snaps. That is a lot of youth playing on a team with Super Bowl aspirations. So, it wasn't just garbage time where those guys just kind of came in to get some snaps. Reuben Lowry kind of played in garbage time. Those guys, Teddy Buchanan played a ton. And obviously Malachi Starks is an every down player. And Mike Green played a lot once Kyle Van Noy went down. I think that's a huge sign. These guys need to grow up fast. They chose to fill some of their holes defensively with youth through the draft. And I think those guys really represented themselves well. And if you're looking at future signs and good things that you want to look at and see how they play out, these guys getting meaningful snaps this early in the season, that's huge for them. They're developing these guys on the fly. These guys look like they're up to the task. And it was a really nice performance by a lot of the young defensive players. Maybe there wasn't a splash play by any of them, but they did what they had to do. They're learning on the job, and they certainly look like, you know, they were as advertised. They look like they belong. And I think that's a huge sign for the future for the Ravens.
Yeah, we kind of talked about it in the preseason where we were seeing some of these UDFAs step into pretty big roles and then eventually having three of them on the defense make the final 53. And I remember a comment I made back then was, you know, this team, this coaching staff, is focused on merit. They don't really seem to care about things like where they were drafted, when they were drafted. They're not really making the rookies earn it, like I think we've heard a narrative around in the past. A guy like Peebles, I think, is a perfect example like that. He's playing a lot and playing in some critical moments, and he's playing extremely well. There's a metric out there. I should have sent it to you, Bobby, showed rookie splash plays, and Peebles is third in the NFL among rookies in terms of splash plays for defensive players. So I think stuff like that's really exciting. And, I'll build on what Jeff said, because one thing I do want to touch on, I think the use of DeAndre Hopkins was really exciting, because there are two of those catches, which I still think the first one was a touchdown. So I think two touchdown throws to DeAndre Hopkins, or 1.99, I guess. That was the, you know, F it, DeAndre down there somewhere throw, right? Yeah. Like where they were just going to put it up. And the Baltimore Ravens with Lamar Jackson at the helm just hasn't had that guy. And I know I was giving DeAndre Hopkins a lot of hype, but I remember I tweeted this signing is going to be closer to Anquan Boldin than it is. You know, I think my example was Jeremy Maclin in terms of like where the Ravens have been bringing in these vet receivers in recent years, and some have panned out and some haven't. And those are the types of plays that I was expecting from a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, where he can make a big play, he can be a ball winner, he can go up and get it. And, you know, it just reminds me of last year where Lamar was putting in really well-placed balls to Nelson Agholor, and Agholor, as well as he did when he was here, he just couldn't make those big, you know, prime time type plays. So DeAndre Hopkins comes out as a major positive to me. He's off watch. I hope that talk goes away, because I saw a player on tape last year that started the season injured and got a lot better fundamentally throughout the year. And then I'll get into one guy that really impressed me was Zach Orr. His creativity on third down was, I did a film study on it today, very impressive to me, you know, especially after the criticism of, you know, being a little bit conservative in the fourth quarter against the Bills. He was running everything. They were running cover two rotations out of dime. They were running, you know, cover one man. They were rolling cover four, running the cover four stick coverage where they're bringing Kyle Hamilton down into the box against the X receiver. He threw the kitchen sink at them. Now, obviously, they're going to need to do this against a top offense. It's Cleveland Browns. It's Joe Flacco. I get it. But seeing some of this development, seeing them run dime with, you know, Awuzie, you know, playing that kind of middle of the field with Wiggins and TJ Tampa wide, I think that's really exciting. It gives them some different looks, and it's really just highlighting some of the different things that they can do on defense. So I'm really excited about that. I thought Zach Orr really stepped up to the plate, and, you know, after what the Lions just did, he's going to have to show it in a major way this week against a very good offense. So I do like the idea that you kind of struggle against Detroit, and you kind of answer it against Cleveland, and now you got to prove it against a big dog. So I want to see him build on that, but I think there were some very encouraging signs in terms of showing that comfort, showing that reliance on Malachi Starks. They don't have any issue leaving him deep and just letting them play cover one. You know, they had that one play where Kyle Hamilton came down on the robber in cover one in the red zone, and he blew up that third and six pass. So little things like that that I'm just noticing where they trust these kids, and I think that's really exciting.
We're going to talk about that Detroit team that you just referenced too, because they ain't the Browns coming to the bank on Monday night, 52 burger, if you will. But they looked really different week one against Green Bay. I think we all know that. And they bounced back in a big way, though, against, yes, a lesser Chicago Bear team that's really still developing under a new head coach and whatnot. But the direction I'm going to go in before we get, you know, some health status updates from Jeff and whatever you can share on that end of things, I'm going to go with special teams, guys. We'll get to the dynamic kickoff later on, but I want to focus on, you know, a player that had a little bit of noise surrounding him, despite being like, what, a day one of or day two of free agency sign-in back in March, and that's Jake Hummel from the Rams. They let Chris Board walk. They let Malik Harrison walk, you know, two guys that had big-time contributions in special teams over the years for them. In Chris's case, he had multiple stints with the Ravens, and in comes Jake Hummel. And I can remember on our roster prediction show, we're all kind of sitting here like, yeah, Jeff, I remember you speaking with some conviction that day. Like, they like this guy. There's a reason why they went and got him, you know, so early in the process back in March. But for him to, you know, not only knife through the line there, but also get a hand on the football, I mean, that really shifted things. And I think, you know, Sanusi Kane continues to be a standout specialist for them and Chris Horton. Tyler Loop makes both of his kicks. One from 43. And so I think, you know, after week one in particular, and after last year, knowing that this is a unit that has underperformed in terms of what their standard is, yeah, we're 2 weeks in and it's 1 week, but they contributed to this win, as did the defense, as we've noted, and as did Lamar's arm, which we're going to get into. So for me, it's special teams. Let's swing the pendulum back around and talk about what Jeff did not like on Sunday.
I let Cole do the heavy lifting on the offensive line stuff. He puts in a lot of work on that. It's very passionate on it. That obviously stood out for me. The big thing, though, and I'll speak generally and Cole could go specific. The big thing for me is they're going to have to learn to run the ball when other teams know they're going to run it. And that's been a trademark of the best Ravens teams in recent years. Everybody in the stadium knows they're going to run the ball, and they still were able to gain yards and get first downs and avoid being behind the sticks and second and third and long constantly. And that wasn't the case in the fourth quarter in Buffalo, when the Buffalo knew they were going to run it and they couldn't stop them. And that certainly wasn't the case all game, really, Sunday. They popped a couple runs. I think Browns wore down a little down the stretch, but they're going to need to run the ball when teams know it's coming. They're going to need to be better in that area, give Derrick Henry more time, more yardage before contact. There were times where it was just meat at the ball carrier for the Browns. That's a really good front. But that, frankly, wasn't good enough Sunday, and that's not going to be good enough for this team. They need to be better, giving Derrick Henry lanes, running the ball in obvious situations. And, you know, that's hard. But that's something they've always been able to do, and we haven't seen them be able to do it yet this year. Obviously, they ran the hell out of the ball through the first three quarters in Buffalo, but once it got tight and it got pretty obvious that they were going to try to eat clock, they couldn't do it. And then, you know, the Browns knew what was coming. They're comfortable playing the Ravens. They know what to look for, and they shut that down immediately. I mean, that was the lowest rushing yards in Lamar Jackson's tenure as a starting quarterback Sunday. So they're going to keep seeing that. I mean, not every defense is capable of doing what the Browns did. Not every defense is as strong a front as the Browns are, but they just need to be better at the point of attack there and creating more holes and kind of setting the tone with the run game.
Yeah, no, I think let's start with the run game and then we'll get into the pass game when we talk about the offensive line. I think I can't remember the last time I've seen a team kind of be dominant up front for three quarters and then completely lose it in the fourth and then carry it into the next game. And make no mistake about it, the Browns front did this to Cincinnati the week before, where they have a good guy in Chase Brown that can run that football. And I forget what the stat was. They had like the second lowest yards before contact allowed since next gen stats for the NFL had started tracking. So basically they were contacting Chase Brown before he got to the line of scrimmage over and over and over again. So what I found interesting in this matchup was Todd Monken saw what happened in the fourth quarter. He saw what the Browns did, and they came out with this kind of bizarro run game early, where it was, I think in their first four runs, the way I charted it, they ran an influence trap, a buck sweep, a crunch trap, and then I think another influence trap. So basically what a trap play is trying to do is take advantage of those upfield rushers. And the problem was just nobody executed. And that's kind of the ongoing problem. They can't blow guys off the line of scrimmage. So for example, on that buck sweep, it gets blown up because Roger Rosengarten, who just has to down block and pin so that the pullers can go around him. Well, when he tried to do it, Tyler Linderbaum ran into Roger because Roger got blown off the line of scrimmage. And so you can look at the play calling, you can be frustrated with the play calling, but it really comes down when a team needs to run the football, they need to be able to move guys off the line of scrimmage. And this has been a major issue on the right side of this offensive line, where, and I would group kind of Andrew Voorhees in there a little bit as well. And honestly, Tyler Linderbaum's gotten blown back a few times. So they're just not able to move guys off the line of scrimmage. So I feel like it's two teams in a row. And then they got DJ Reader coming to town. They got Alan McNeil coming to town, who they're going to just one gap the crap out of this team. And they've only really been overly successful moving the ball outside of the tackle. So I think that's limiting in and of itself. Then we get into the pass protection, and oh my God, what a house of horrors that was. Like, where do you start? Ronnie Stanley always gets his butt. Yeah, we'll go left to right. Like, let's just walk across because we can, unfortunately. Ronnie Stanley gets his butt whooped by Myles Garrett. It's Myles Garrett. I get it. Like, you are paying Ronnie Stanley top money. You're paying him to take on those top guys. Like, it's a tough one. But a couple of sacks allowed, a couple quick pressures against Ronnie. It wasn't as, despite it being Myles Garrett, it still was a bad performance against Myles Garrett, given how many chips he had, that sort of thing. So that was disappointing. I thought Ronnie played really well in week one, big step back in week two. I agreed with PFF. I had him charted with five pressures when I did my breakdown. It'll be out tomorrow morning for those that want to see it. Andrew Voorhees was a house of horrors in this game. I had him charted with four pressures, but I had about four other plays on top of that where it's just clean, quick losses. Either the ball was out or, you know, his guy didn't make a play on Lamar, so it isn't going to in the book as a charted pressure. And we have to keep that in mind, right? Because pressures are really helpful. It's a helpful stat that you can attribute to the offensive line. But there are a lot of situations where guys are still losing reps, and Andrew Voorhees has been losing a lot of reps. So that's really concerning. He looks like I kept saying he's weeble wobbling. Like, you know, he'd overset to the inside and overset to the outside, and it's really hard to kind of bang down on what the issue is. But one thing I'm noticing is he's playing with wide hands a lot. And that was an issue I had with Roger Rosengarten and Daniel Falele. And I'm really wondering how much of an influence George Warhop's having on that. So it's something I kind of mentioned to you guys earlier. I'd love to ask some of his former players if that's something that is kind of in his bag, because I don't really remember Voorhees having the outside hands problem as much as he's having right now. Then you get to Tyler Linderbaum. Oh, my God, he struggled in this game. It's sad to see. I hate to see it. I hate to critique one of my favorite players, but really struggled in this one. You know, ended up on the ground about two different times just on quick losses. He really struggled against the speed of Mason Graham and Malik Collins. And that's usually his game, right? Like, usually it's the big physical DJ readers that spent so many years in Cincy that's coming to town this weekend. Usually it's those big noses that he struggled with, but he really struggled with the speed. So I'm not sure what was going on there, but again, it comes down to that penetration. And, you know, one thing I noticed is they were sliding to the right so often. So, you know, they're trying to help out the right side of their offensive line. And how much is that impacting Tyler? Usually, you know, with a smaller center, you want to be able to give that help to the center. You know, I think Greg Roman used to say, I can hide a center. I can't necessarily hide a guard or a tackle the same. So you'll want to do that so you can unlock what that center can do as a run blocker. Then you get to Daniel Falele. I actually thought he had a pretty good game in pass pro. Say something nice about Daniel Falele. I thought he had a good game. You know, I'll give credit where it's due. Everyone's grabbing that one clip that he kind of looked lost, and he has really bad awareness. Like, there's no doubt about that, but I'm kind of whatever on that. They were running a slide protection to the right and a guy crossed his face. So he went into Tyler. Typically you'd kind of stay on a double team there, but it wasn't like, it's not a great play, but it's, I think it was being a little overblown. I was surprised we're seeing that when I can literally show you Andrew Voorhees turning in a 360 doing the hokey pokey. So
let's be honest, Cole, if they're only grabbing one play for Daniel, it was probably a job well done.
Yeah, seriously. So it is funny to me though, because like I got branded as the Daniel Falele hater, and I think I throw the hate at everyone when they play poorly. So, and then we go to Roger. I thought Roger bounced back a little bit in this game. He really struggled against Joey Bosa's power, but I thought he bounced back. I do disagree with this graphic, though. I saw that coming out. I had him charted with a pressure, and I trust my eyes more than PFF's. So that's okay, though. But I thought he definitely played a little bit better in this game. I thought he had three or four reps against Myles Garrett that were really solid. So I'm seeing him get his bearings a little bit in pass protection, but it's really his run blocking. That's the major issue, and that's really glaring. So I guess what I'm getting to and why I wanted to kind of do a big overview, the inconsistencies, the roller coasters of the five guys on this offensive line are the fundamental concern for me, because it's not just one issue. It's not just one guy in one aspect. It's all five guys that are just creating this inconsistent play from your front five. And we saw it in the second quarter. When I did the charting, I had five pressures allowed on 10 dropbacks in the first quarter. In the second quarter, they ran eight plays and I only had two. Sounds better, right? You know, you're kind of cutting that down. Well, they rolled out or did a design boot on six of those eight plays. So Todd Monken in the second quarter had to completely, and to be, I was hard on Todd Monken on Sunday, and I really ate my words when I studied the film, and that's why film study is so important. So when I went back to study it, and you see him calling the bootlegs, you see him calling the rollouts, he is limited in his play calling, and he's trying to tighten things up so that he, you know, his quarterback's not getting smacked, so they're not giving up these negative plays all the time. So that impact of the offensive line on an offensive coordinator really shined in this game. They were giving chips from both the running back and the tight end, which means you're only getting three guys out in patterns, and they're only bringing four. So you got three out against a seven-man coverage, and they're still getting pressure with four off chips. That is completely unacceptable of an offensive line. If you're going to get two guys in there to help you, you damn well better be able to block four with five. Like, that's unacceptable. So until this offensive line can really kind of, you know, shore things up, I think this is going to be an issue. I don't think things get any easier this week. Aiden Hutchinson's coming to town. He doesn't look himself since coming back from surgery. And we know some guys, when they're coming off those injuries, can take a little bit to ramp up. But we know DJ Reader has given this team problems. He's definitely the interior issue. Alan McNeil can push the pocket. Marcus Davenport kind of sucked when I watched him, so I'm not as worried there. But, you know, they have a game breaker, Nathan Hutchinson, that if he starts to ramp up and get back to himself is going to be a game breaker. So they have another guy coming to town, and then Chris Jones is coming into town in the week after. Then the Houston pass rush is coming to town, and there's just no bad D-lines in the NFL anymore. There's always dogs coming to town, and I think it's going to be a bit of an issue.
Pat Ricard's availability seems pretty relevant to the content that you just ripped off the last few minutes. And that's where we're going to go in just a bit here on the other side of this. And Jeff, of course, is going to set things up here right after this. Pat Ricard, Jair Alexander, Kyle Van Noy, now the newest player that's in that injury category, if you will. More on that in just a bit. We appreciate you guys for being with us tonight on the Ravens Collective. A word from our sponsor.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
All right, guys, you guys know the drill here. Sleeper's been with us for several weeks now and will be throughout the entirety of this season. We're going to be live with you on Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock Eastern for the foreseeable future. And if you use the promo code HMA, as you heard, Dale, you'll get up to a $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions do apply. You can see Sleeper's terms of use for details. It's currently operational in over 25 states. You can check out Sleeper today. And as always, we always like to say, what makes this thing go? Yes, us, the three of us showing up, but ultimately sustaining it. Our brand sponsors go a long way to doing exactly that. So appreciate them. Appreciate all of you guys for being here. Over 300 concurrents. Let's quickly go to, gentlemen, shall we go to it quickly here? One super chat that's come in before we shift gears. And man, you know, I got a bone to pick with StreamYard. These like disappear on me for whatever reason. And I don't know why, but Clinton Ganaway is the lone super chat that's come in so far tonight. And he writes, glad I was able to get here early tonight. Thanks for all the hard work, guys. Glad I got a nap in earlier. Clinton, Oklahoma's finest. Glad to have you here, brother. Thanks for the super chat. And Jeff, your thoughts on the Pat Ricard situation. John Harbaugh talked a little bit about that at his press conference on Monday, which, gosh, feels like such a long week. That was just yesterday. It's a calf. It was initially described as a soft tissue setback, but was there a setback of the setback?
Yeah, there had to be, right? And, you know, I know John Harbaugh gets accused of not being forthcoming all the time with injuries, but all indications are heading into that last preseason game that they expected everyone except likely to be on the practice field heading into the week one opener against Buffalo. Not only did we not see Pat Ricard on the practice field that week, we didn't see him on last week. And John Harbaugh just labeled him week to week, which is term, if you've been around and heard John Harbaugh's injury updates, week to week means you're not seeing him this weekend. That's just how he sort of, you know, characterizes injuries of guys he's chalking up as being out. So there's no doubt if they knew it was going to be this long of an absence, I think Pat Ricard would have started the season on IR. But you do it now and you're basically restarting his clock. You put him on IR this weekend and, you know, he has to miss the next four games. So you're pretty much starting over, and then you're not getting Pat Ricard back till almost midseason, or like at least 40% through the season. So that's been a surprise and a disappointment for both the Ravens and for Ricard. I've seen him around the locker room. You can tell it's killing him to not be out there. He wants to play. He makes them better offensively, but he just hasn't been able to get out there. I mean, calf injuries can be tough, and they also can lead to Achilles issues, as we've seen in the past. So you have to be really careful that doesn't get worse and make sure he's healthy before he comes back. But no question, I think that one has been a little bit of a surprise for them.
Cole, transitioning to, and we'll go back and forth between you guys on this one, because, you know, Jair Alexander, when he was brought in, of course, latter half of free agency, was it, Jeff? Was it late spring, early summer?
Yeah. What was it, during mandatory minicamp, I think.
Was it? Okay, yeah. So that would mid-June. Be June. Yeah, that would be June. And we know the facts. The facts are is that the dude is what? well less than a year removed from the PCL, the procedure, the knee drain, of course, that took place the opening week of training camp. And so, Cole, you know, week one, 30% of the snap chair he ends up getting in. You're thinking to yourself, wow, okay, he must have really been in the coaching staff's ear. And then he ends up being a healthy scratch on game day for week two. And so that meant that Chido Awuzie, of course, would play a hefty amount. TJ Tampa got a chance to show what he was about in outside of just special teams, which we know he's a capable player in that side of things. So moving forward with the way, and you know, John Harbaugh comes out, Jeff, as you saw and listened to directly at his press conference yesterday, and say, look, Jair's going to play. We got to get him to where he needs to be. So Cole, after watching the film from week one and knowing where they are right now and knowing all the talent and depth they have in that secondary, where do they need him to be?
Yeah, I think they need to get him up to speed, and he needs some of those practice reps. I think those are a lot more important than we realized. Obviously, he didn't look himself. He didn't look 100%. He didn't even look remotely comfortable out there. So I think that's a big concern. And then you get TJ Tampa out there, who, you know, lighter on the plays and probably roughly what Alexander played, maybe a little bit less, you know, especially coming in on the dime package. And he makes a couple plays, right? So I think you got to really roll with the hot hand in this regard. And you're almost treating this as a deadline acquisition when Alexander comes in. So if you kind of spent the next 3-4 weeks, you know, just integrating him in practice, then you give it another shot, you know, maybe after the bye week, for example. But I don't see how after this you go back to Alexander after Tampa just played so well. You know what I mean? Like, I have a hard time with that. I think Awuzie's played really well as well. And so, you know, he gave up that back shoulder ball to Jerry Jeudy. But I mean, you find a better place back shoulder ball. That's what Joe's career has been, right? Like, Awuzie didn't get his head back around, but when you watch it from the sideline view, he did look back. It was just that high archer that, you know, was perfectly placed to Jerry's back shoulder. So through 2 weeks, I have no issues with Awuzie. I have no issues with TJ Tampa, but I had some pretty big issues with Jaire Alexander. So no disrespect to him. I think they're going to get him back. He's a vet. He just needs to get up to speed. We've seen this with so many guys. I just mentioned it about Aiden Hutchinson. These injuries are hard to come back from. Remember Marlon Humphrey was getting called washed in 2023, and then last year he was their best defensive player. Well, maybe Kyle Hamilton, but one of their best defensive players, several, you know, closing plays in games last year. So give him some grace, give him some practice time, let him ramp up and play your hot hand when you have it. And I think TJ Tampa and Awuzie showed that they can make plays in his absence.
Yeah, I think whether Jair plays this week, Monday, may depend on Marlon Humphrey's status. We saw him left with a groin injury. And the good news is once he went back to the locker room, he came back out pretty quick and he was running pretty well down the sideline. He was kind of doing sprints or, you know, a lot of agility stuff with the trainer, the head athletic trainer nearby watching. And my guess is if they needed him, he would have been back in the game. They were winning big, and why mess with that? I don't necessarily know if he'll be at practice all week, but they didn't seem to be as concerned about that injury in terms of being maybe a multi-week thing as Kyle Van Noy's hamstring. So I think with Jaire Alexander, benching him is maybe harsh, but making him a healthy scratch is basically an acknowledgement that we screwed up by having him play in the first week. That's exactly what that is. And one more comment about that topic, guys. I don't see all the behind the scenes stuff. Stuff happens. John and Jair have apparently been in constant talk and collaboration about their plan, and they've been upfront with him. But by all accounts, he's handled this really well, and he's bought in. Now, we see him on the practice field last week. He was out there pretty early. He was doing stuff, work on his own. He wasn't a guy that appeared to be pouting. On the field, he was the second guy on the field Sunday to start his warm-up, and he did a long warm-up. He was catching tennis balls. He was running routes. He was doing a ton. He was probably out there for a good 45 minutes getting a really serious workout in. And then, I'm not close enough in the press box to see what he was doing throughout the game, but I saw camera pan to him a couple times, and he was encouraging teammates and celebrating and being a good teammate. And I, you know, you note something like this just because he sort of had a reputation at times in Green Bay for being a malcontent. And it's not easy for a veteran player who's as accomplished as him to be told you're not good enough or you're not fit enough right now to help us and play against a team like the Browns. So that couldn't have been easy for Jaire Alexander, but I think it was absolutely the right call to give him an opportunity to get some more practices in. You got some young guys that are practicing well, give them a chance. We'll see what happens Monday. That's an awful tough assignment with some really good receivers if he's not fully ready. So maybe you wait another week. But as I said, I don't like going short at cornerback. I think you're asking for trouble. We saw it a little Sunday. They sort of were out of cornerbacks a little bit, and Nate Wiggins was hobbling around, and yet he still was on the field late in the fourth quarter because they frankly didn't have anybody else to play. I would always try to dress an extra cornerback if you can, so maybe that impacts your decision. But all in all, I think you know, he seemed to handle it well, and I think it was a really smart move by the Ravens to sort of right a wrong from week one.
Underrated point, Jay-Z, because, you know, we've seen this in the past where guys get outside of a role that they were kind of expecting, and we haven't necessarily seen it as much on the Ravens, but you see it around the league, and it really speaks to the culture. And as much as people give Harbaugh shit for things, I think you got to give him credit, because this is another guy that's kind of come in that's been a little bit more animated outside of Baltimore.
Yeah.
Reminds me of Marcus Peters, and he comes in and things may not have ended well here, but it just feels like he's completely bought into what they're trying to accomplish. And, you know, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. So great point on making sure that they have numbers, though. I love that point. And it really just comes down to who you deploy in certain situations and finding, you know, that right combination. Especially, again, I was surprised by how much dime they played, and I'd be a little surprised to see that much against the Lions, just with their run game and the way they like to play multiple tight ends, kind of like the Ravens do. But then again, you got guys like Jameson Williams that can get deep on you. You got Amon-Ra St. Brown, that's probably the best route runner, or one of the best route runners in football right now.
Now, speaking of numbers, guys, too, the aforementioned Kyle Van Noy is going to factor into the game day numbers that the Ravens come up with, you know, roster wise on Monday night. And so now attention turns right to the rookie in Mike Green. He played 45 snaps on Sunday. John Harbaugh said that, you know, he took another step. That was the quote. Still plenty to work on. Likes the progress. Of course, 2 weeks into his season. I mean, people forget that, yeah, he's the FBS leader from a season ago. And, yeah, he's a second-round pick that maybe could have been, what Cole, top 15, top 10, somewhere around there, had he not had some of the off-the-field issues that plagued his overall draft stock. But KVN's expected to miss some time, Jeff, as you noted. So you can, I would think, assume that David Ajabo will be up for the first time this year. He's been inactive back-to-back weeks, I should say. He snuck his way onto this roster. And so moving forward now, when you look at the outside linebacker group, Jeff, you know, in terms of how they're going to go about it, obviously your eyes turn to the two guys that are next man up, if you will, in Adafe and Mike, even though they play a lot as it is. But is Ajabo even going to have a chance to be somebody that factors into the equation?
I think he's going to have to. You know, you dress four, and he's the fourth right now, and he should be plenty fresh. He's been practicing every week. He hasn't missed really any time. He's been out there ever. I don't know that he missed a practice all summer. So, you know, we're quick to say, and I'm a part of this, I'm not, you know, pointing any fingers, but we're quick to label someone bust. And, you know, when he was inactive in week one and week two, it's just like, you know, he's done, like move on. You need these guys through the course of the season, and he's going to get an opportunity here. And last time I checked, the Lions have some pretty good tackles, you know, so they're going to have their hands full a little bit, but they're going to need to get contributions from him. Tavius Robinson's going to play more pass rushing snaps, as we know. That's going to have to happen too. Owe's probably going to, you know, there's been games where Owe's not even playing 50% of defensive snaps. I can't imagine that happens. So you're going to need these guys, and it's David Ajabo's time. I don't think he's going to play a ton, but he'll work into that rotation, I would expect. And you know, it's a tough time to be without Kyle Van Noy. Just look at the quarterbacks they play over the next 3 or 4 weeks. And, you know, I don't know exactly how long Kyle Van Noy is going to miss. Hamstring injuries are so tricky. You think you're coming back and it grabs on you. You know, it's kind of been the story of the Baltimore Orioles season. You know, they give all these projections and these guys get, you know, incidents happen then we don't see him for a month. But it's the same way with hamstrings. We saw it with Ricard. You can't really take any chances. But even a moderate hamstring injury is going to sideline a guy for 2 to 4 weeks, usually in that range. So that's the expectation for Van Noy. We'll see. But, you know, just like maybe Keaton Mitchell gets a shot if Rasheen Ali's not out of the protocol this week, or maybe even if he is, he'll get a shot. David Ajabo's time, you know, he's going to get an opportunity here to contribute. And if they're still having problems on the edge, I think we know their clear target ahead of the trade deadline in about 6-7 weeks. But as of now, they're going to go with what they have and give guys opportunities, you know, to play more and to play at all in Ajabo's case.
Cole, you totaled it up here, right? In terms of, let me just make sure our screen looks good. I mean, in terms of pressures, Nnamdi Matabike leads the way for a second consecutive week. Mike, Adafe, Tavius, log 3 pressures. I know sometimes you don't agree with these from PFF, so feel free to dive into that.
Being difficult.
That's why we love you. Travis Jones, Roquan, KVN had a couple. KVN was playing well in that first half before he went down. Cheeto, the lone DB, to be recorded here or to record a pressure, I should say. So, by the way, you know, we really haven't mentioned it. It probably deserves a little bit of attention. Roquan Smith, perhaps the best game of his Ravens career. I mean, can you go back to, like, I don't know, like early on in 2022 after the deadline? I can remember like the third or fourth game he had in Baltimore was stellar. You can pick a plethora of them in 2023, not so much in 2024. So just wanted to throw that in there. But your overall thoughts now on the room going into, like you said, you know, this sort of murderer's row beginning of the schedule. Not that week one wasn't in Buffalo, but it doesn't get any easier from now until that early bye next month, Cole.
Yeah, I mean, the old adage of the Ravens used to be next man up, and it's no different now. And it's going to be Tavius Robinson's going to have to step up in a big way. I think him and Owe are going to be leaned on heavily in this matchup against the Lions, specifically for their physicality on the edge against this run game, containing Jahmyr Gibbs on the edge. Some of the good things that they can do getting outside the tackle in their zone runs, you know, heavy duo team as well. So those big boys inside are going to have to take care of business. But, you know, the way I see it kind of working is your base ends are going to be essentially Robinson and Owe. And then you got Ojabo and Mike Green working in a situational pass rushers. And that's definitely how I'd run it. They kind of did that last week with Robinson where they want to, you know, make sure they shut down the run early. And I think that makes sense, especially against a Joe Flacco led team. We all know his go-to was to get into play action as much as humanly possible. So I think they need to rely on guys like Ojabo and Mike Green. Mike Green's going to play a lot more than Ojabo, just to be clear, and will definitely play against the run as well. But Ojabo's going to come in, play like 10 snaps against the pass. So kind of those third and long situations just to spell. But I think it's a big, big couple weeks for Tavius Robinson where he can really kind of prove his thing. And, you know, I'm always pulling for the Canadians. So, but a little focus on Roe. The one thing about Roe in this game that really stood out was I can't remember a guy in the last few years where I've really been studying film where he's constantly pointing out exactly what the offense is going to do. Like it was a little weird. You know, they had that one play where he's pointing and then Teddy Buchanan literally follows him through the gap and Roe blows it up for -3. He had the play where he broke on Ford on a swing pass. He knew what play was going to be called. So, you know, the clip of Ray talking to him on the sideline, I don't know if Roe or if Ray tied him to a chair and made him watch film with him for 48 hours straight. I'm not really sure what it was, but he knew what that Cleveland Browns defense was doing. And he just played like his hair was on fire. And I think that was the big thing. And you got to, I clipped a few plays of Teddy Buchanan and you got to wonder if Teddy Buchanan's providing some of that stability beside him, especially in pass coverage, if that's letting Roe play a little bit more free. You know, I got to give Teddy a ton of credit. And if I don't, his dad's going to yell at me on Twitter again. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I think he's really stepped up to the plate and a guy that's gotten better very quick. And I think that's super exciting. So it's a big big matchup for those two guys, though. These are guys that are finesse guys. They want to use their speed. They want to get kept clean, and they want to meet you before you get to the gap rather than in the gap as much as humanly possible. That's what they did so well against the Browns. But this Lions defense is different. This Browns O-line used to be very physical. They're just getting a little older. They're not quite what they were in their primes with Betonio and Teller and those guys. And, you know, no Jack Conklin in the lineup as well. But, you know, this Lions offense led by Dan Campbell, they want to eat your kneecaps. We already know that. So they're going to come out. They're going to play physical. And this entire – it's going to feel like an old-school AFC North matchup where they're going to have to play physical. They're going to have to win the line of scrimmage. And, again, big week for Tavius Robinson, but also big week for these linebackers who they shined last week. No doubt about it. No question about it. But this is a different matchup in terms of the physicality they're going to have to play with. And I think they're going to have to be ready and to do that.
Is it just me, guys, or is there something about this unrelenting enthusiasm from this year's rookie class parents? I mean, you got Roy Higgins out there getting it. Steve Loop is very enthusiastic randomly in my Discord server. And did you say Teddy's father? Is that what you said, Cole?
Yeah, he got mad at me. I put a nice tweet out about him, and he said, "Oh, now you're finally noticing." And then I clicked on the profile, and I was like, "Wonder who that is?" And it said, it was a picture of Teddy, and then it said like father of Cal Bears or something like that. I was like, damn, they just find me everywhere.
Oh, that's so good.
But you know what? I'll give them credit. They're out there. They're enjoying their young lads. You know, that this is the new age social media, as the kids say.
Jeff, I want to get your thought on this, Jeff, before we shift gears to want a peek ahead at Detroit and this Monday Night Football blockbuster matchup and some super chats. I want to get your thoughts on this because Jadeveon Clowney is off the board. Matthew Judon off the board to Miami. Za'Darius Smith off the board to Philadelphia. Clowney is going to Dallas. Obviously, they need all the help they can get, having lost, and really not lost. They let him go. They let Micah Parsons go. It's a one-year deal for Jadeveon, up to $6 million. I saw that the base was somewhere around $3.5 million, if memory serves. So your thoughts on this, generally speaking, maybe if you had a feel for whether or not the Ravens, you know, we're interested at any point and we're just kind of waiting to get a feel for their room. Anything you'd like to share on this?
I never got the impression that they were all in on bringing back Jadeveon Clowney or even in at all. Maybe they got more interested in it when they learned Kyle Van Noy was going to be out for a while. But at that point, it was pretty much too late. Jadeveon Clowney had agreed to a deal with Dallas by Sunday afternoon, probably even before they knew the extent of Kyle Van Noy's injury. But yeah, there's just been no real traction on bringing him back in the days before that. His tape last year wasn't very good. I think he's a guy that I think Jadeveon Clowney kind of needs to be in winning situations. And when he signed with Carolina, I was skeptical that was a good fit for him. You know, his family's from that area. That's where he wanted to go, and they paid him handsomely. I get it. I just, you know, Jadeveon Clowney with a rebuilding organization, to me, it's just not a great fit. And I think the Ravens and him brought out the best in each other. It was a good fit, but I think they were ready to move on. And you know, Jadeveon Clowney, to me, as of a week ago, didn't make a ton of sense because whose snaps are you cutting? Are you further cutting Owe and Van Noy's? Are you cutting Mike Green and not giving him an opportunity? I'm not even talking about Jabo. I'm talking about the guys already on the roster. And you had a guy like that, he's not going to succeed in getting 10 to 12 snaps. That's not a role Jadeveon Clowney's going to succeed in. You need to play him, and those snaps need to come somewhere. So even if he played well, you're kind of subtracting the effectiveness of someone already on your roster. So you're adding something, but you're also taking away something. To me, it didn't make a lot of sense until Kyle Van Noy went out. Now they're very thin, you know, at edge rusher, and they're facing some really tough quarterbacks. And it's bad timing, as I said, with the Van Noy injury. But no, maybe things heated up at some point Sunday, but I never got the impression they were all in on bringing Jadeveon Clowney back to town. That just never seemed to be in the cards.
All right. So unless it's early November, you're saying basically that there's not many left out there, right? In that veteran mold that would be 1 year, or, you know, a rental or even a half season in Jadeveon's case, even though he'll get pretty much a full season, 15 weeks or so with Dallas. Guys, let's get into some super chats. They're pouring in tonight. Dreams writes, unleash my demon. It's David Ajabo's time to shine. Going back to our earlier conversation, Cole, take this one from your fellow Canadian.
Howdy, guys. Fellow Canadian here. What level of output can we expect from Tez Walker going forward? I think that's a great question. And I think what you kind of saw on Sunday is what to expect, where it's going to be a little bit like we've talked about with DeAndre Hopkins. There's not going to be a high quantity of snaps or targets, but if he can take advantage of the targets he gets for big plays, that's what they need out of him. They need that kind of rotational role player that can make a splash play, and Tez did that in a big way. I think it didn't get enough attention. Lamar threw that ball when Tez was at the 10-yard line going in. It sailed, and Tez didn't get his head around until about the, I think it had it at like the 6-yard line. So he had to track that ball, didn't see it leave Lamar's hand. Obviously, it's a design route, so he knows where he's supposed to be going. But just his body control, his tracking ability when that ball was in the air, all the little things that you want to see out of a role player. And again, how many times did we have a ball like that last year? Remember when Nelson Agholor like ran into the post?
Sammy Watkins.
Yeah, and was that Miami?
That was the game where they blitzed the Ravens off the field. It was like, every play. They were just blitzing.
What are we doing? And so I feel like it was one of those games where Lamar was able to put the ball into certain places and his receivers made plays. So that's what we need out of Tez Walker.
Yeah, I'll be honest. We had this discussion about Tez Walker, and we got some hate commentary on the side. And you know, I'm more than willing to admit when I'm wrong. And I said I wouldn't be surprised if he's inactive early in the season. And if he's going to be inactive, it's going to be because special teams. And I still stand by that. I mean, he didn't play a single offensive snap in week one, but he's their gunner on special teams. He's playing on all their special teams units. And you could just tell how hard they were on him. Anthony Levine and you know, the Chris Wharton are all over him in practice about special teams. That's what's going to get him a jersey. But you have him active on game days. Why wouldn't you use a guy like that? They just don't have anybody who looks like him or runs like him in that way. So I think that's awesome. I'm not a fantasy football player anymore. I don't know that I would have used a waiver claim on him just because there's so many mouths to feed. But that what a job for, you know, what a game for the kid. In fact, it was kind of cool. We were walking down to the locker room after, and the new Ravens press box is not very accessible right now to the locker room. And we walked by some of the suites, and we walked by a must have been a family suite where Devontae Walker's had family was sitting, and they were all wearing Devontae Walker jerseys. And you could just tell how excited they were. What a game. Three career catches and three career touchdowns. I don't think he's going to beat Mike Vrabel's record anytime soon with most first catches for touchdowns. But what a great sign for the kid.
And you're not kidding, too. That 4.36 speed was flashing. Takes you back to some of those one-on-one matchups that he and Nate Wiggins had, UNC, Clemson, ACC football. Those dudes were running stride for stride with one another. A lot of fun back in the day. But Nick Marty, this one's for you, Jeff. He says, do you think they trade a veteran O-lineman? Cole, it's a two-part question. Cole, do you see improvement on the O-line like 2012? McKinney had to get in shape, and KO got better? What's KO?
Osemele.
Kelechi Osemele.
So, Jeff, you first, yeah. And then Cole.
Yeah, I mean, one of the underrated decisions in their 2012 Super Bowl run, inserting Bryant McKinney, moving Osemele to guard, and moving Orr to the right tackle spot. I don't know if they have that move. I'll let Cole hit on that. I mean, I imagine he's saying trade for a veteran offensive lineman, and I think to look at what's out there, guys, but that's a hard position to find. And I say that because even most of the rebuilding teams, the teams that are out of it, still are playing a young quarterback who they want to see get better and they want to protect. Like the Titans. Titans spent a lot on the offensive line. They're probably not going to be in the playoff hunt. But do you really want Cam Ward getting killed late in the season? And if the Browns go to Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders, I'm thinking about the other 0-2 teams. The Giants will eventually have Jackson Dart playing. Do you want to get him killed by subtracting one of your good offensive linemen? And the answer is usually no. So that's why so few of those guys are traded. But you know, I certainly think it's something that they're going to be on the lookout for. And, you know, but you also wonder if they don't feel like Emory Jones is a potential answer at some point this season, or maybe Corey Bullock factors in at some point. You know, we saw last year they made a change heading into week three and benched Andrew Voorhees. So I don't think they're against doing that, but it's just, that's a hard position to find on the trade market.
Yeah, Emory Jones is our Obi-Wan. We need him to come in and save us. Little Star Wars reference for the boys. So it is one of those things where maybe you get an edge rusher at the deadline. They seem to be one of those positions like receiver that do hit the market. And, you know, I'd look at, someone mentioned it in the chat and tagged me in it. Kayvon Thibodeau could be a potential guy that, where he's just kind of facing the numbers game, where they brought Carter in, they have Brent Burns or Brian Burns. There's the hockey showing. So, you know, maybe you see a guy like Thibodeau that potentially gets traded, but at the same time, are they going to want to trade someone they just, spent a pretty high draft pick on so early? So maybe because they took Carter and they kind of see that pairing with Burns, they might see the value proposition there. But it's hard to just see a team trading a starting offensive lineman. You know, usually with wide receivers and pass rushers, it can make a little bit more sense because of rotations. And, you know, they're like, we got three, we could deal with two if we're not competing. A little bit different on the O-line. I think you have to view Emory Jones kind of like what I mentioned with Alexander. If he comes back and is able to give you something this year, it's almost like a deadline acquisition, right? Where you're getting a new player that maybe you can integrate, but at the same time, rookie who hasn't played in a year, now he's got no training camp and he's just going to get thrown into his first NFL start. That's probably a tough one to justify, but it's just hard to find offensive linemen. I do love the option of giving Corey Bullock a chance. I was all over that all preseason. He is a smaller guy, but we've seen teams like San Francisco have a lot of success with those smaller guards. So I wouldn't put it outside of the realm of possibility. And if we keep getting Andrew Voorhees weeble wobbling, you got to consider your options at that point.
Nick, thanks for the super chat. Chef Trez chimed in. He said, I like that Roquan doesn't have to babysit linebackers. Let him cause mayhem. Appreciate you, Chef. And how about this donation from Tongsley? He dropped a 60 spot tonight. He says, love the show. Happy to support all of you. And I just got to say, Cole, maybe you can speak to this on Road Graders. Tongsley is one of the most generous dudes out there. We appreciate you. And Jeff, welcome to the Super Chat game. It's a 60 spot for the collective.
Nice.
Thank you, guys. Jeff, why don't you take this one from Don C.
I was waiting for Jay-Z to pull out an air horn.
Oh, you gotta let Cole read this one.
All right.
Well, that's my guy, Don C. So Don C, he's one of the guys from 410 Sports Talk. Don C's the man. Great stream, guys. Cole, you know ball. We got your back. You're definitely my favorite Canadian. We love you, Don C. Thanks for showing some support, brother.
Let's see. Where else? Super chat. And by the way, we've got almost 400 concurrents in here tonight. Needless to say, what really helps the channel grow is liking the video, subscribing, hitting that notification bell, letting folks know in Ravens group chats, family, friends, you name it, of what the collective is all about. Tuesdays at 8 o'clock Eastern moving forward. Okay, Jeff, this one's from Dreams for you.
Yeah, hopefully Jair plays Monday, given his familiarity playing Detroit twice a year when he was in Green Bay. That's a good point, and I think that could come into play. It's a tough situation. You could practice as much as possible, and yes, practice, you can build up your confidence, knock off some rust, but there's no substitute for game rep. So at some point, you gotta let him play in games and let him experience that competition and get back into the heat of action too. So we'll see if that's Monday for him. As I said, it may depend on, you know, their health situation at cornerback. By the game's end, Marlon was out, Nate Wiggins was limping around. So we'll see. They have this week everything's moved back. First practice is Thursday. They have a walkthrough Wednesday, but no availability from the media in terms of practice availability. First injury report won't be till Thursday. So it will be a couple days until we sort of get a feel for how things are stacking up. But I think they know, and I don't think, as I said, I think John said sooner rather than later for Jair, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's back active this weekend.
Thanks, Quion. Don C. with another super chat, and we have addressed this, and we are up against the clock, and we have to get our final thoughts in ahead of week three as well, but I'll read it, Don. And you said, how have Teddy and Mike Green performed at inside and outside linebackers? In your opinion, guys, we've addressed some of that for time purposes. We're going to keep things moving. Appreciate you, Don. Sod Blitz says, OA played well, two holds away from two sacks with a shrugging emoji. And are we fully caught up on super chats? Let me get all the way down to the bottom. Nick Marty with another one. He says, wearing black uniforms, prime time at the bank. Ravens win big. And we got, man, I got to, Jeff, you know off the top of your head what their record is under Harbaugh, primetime home games? It is a well above 500, like insanely above 500. Yeah,
no, I don't know off the top of my head. The game notes came today. I haven't had a chance to peruse them, but that would be in there, I assume. It's dominant. It's you know, they've had
especially with Lamar. Lamar has been dominant on Monday Night Football.
They've had one of the best home field advantages in the sport. And, you know, we heard Joe Burrow's comment this offseason when he said how sick of it he was that he was always having to play the Ravens at home on the road in prime time, and the Bengals always got the 1 p.m.s against the Ravens. So it shows you what another very, very experienced and motivated player thinks of the advantage they have when they have to play at night at the bank.
I tell you what, too, despite Joe Burrow and the Bengals currently being atop the division at 2-0, just to be real quick on this one, Burrow's going to miss at least the next 3 months with a turf toe, grade three.
Should miss both Ravens games later in the season, November. I think they got the Thanksgiving game, and then they got one 2 weeks later. They go, what, Bengals, Steelers, Bengals?
It's November 27th, the first of two.
Thanksgiving night, yeah.
Yep. Pittsburgh is sprinkled in there, to your point, Cole. And then December 14th, 3 months from, 2 days ago, is when Joe Burrow optimistically would be back, right? That'd be the three-month timeline, barring something, you know, unforeseen with his recovery. So as you can see here, he has been injury-prone in recent years, and there is absolutely a reason why. Schefter took a look at the pass pro ranks since he was drafted in terms of pass block win rate, and they have not been, statistically speaking, NFL ranking-wise, where you want to be whatsoever, either the bottom of the barrel or bottom third. So big where I'm going with this is, you know, big opportunity for the Ravens. Obviously what Pittsburgh put on film this past weekend was nothing short of just pitiful, and we know who Cleveland is at this point. Maybe they end up spoiling the Ravens, you know, in a way in that regular season series. They split last year with Jameis Winston, but what they put out there on Sunday I think suggests that, you know, like we said at the top, Jeff, they're going to be picking top five. But where I'm going with this is, you know, they can run the table here if they start to kind of round into form over the next month or so leading into a really early bye week. So some closing thoughts in terms of what's it going to take against the Detroit team that they've dominated, Jeff, in recent years. But this isn't the same Detroit team. They are littered with talent. Cole's already talked about what they boast defensively speaking in terms of what they're going to be bringing at Lamar and company. Goff has all kinds of supporting cast playmakers around him. Dan Campbell clearly has the pulse of that locker room, and they're going to come in hot to trot coming off this 50 burger.
Yeah, two things. One, just an overall, when everybody saw that Ravens schedule to start the season, you know, obviously some fans don't think they should ever lose a game. But I think you thought to yourself, if they go 3-2, that would set them up for really good shape into the stretch run. And now you see, you know, you don't count wins. You never know what could happen. Injuries on both sides. But you just look at some of the games that they thought they'd be really hard. I mean, I've watched the Vikings. They're on prime time. And you know, it looks like they've played a different sport than what the Ravens have played in week one against the Bills. I mean, 7 or 8 quarters, they've been brutal. And, you know, now McCarthy's hurt. So some of the games you thought could be really hard and still may be kind of, you're looking at them and you're, wow, they should win that game. Miami is an absolute mess. I know that that Thursday night Miami setting has given them an issue in the past. That one game we talked about with Sammy Watkins running into the goalpost, they're a mess. So if you look at it, if they can get through this stretch, which includes Rams and Texans and the Lions at 3-2, especially after losing the first game, I think that would be a huge development for this team and set them up in good shape. 38-6, right? That's what happened when these two teams met 2 years ago in October at M&T Bank. Dan Campbell, if I recall correctly, said after the game, like, look, this was a lesson for us. Sometimes you just get your butt whooped. We got whooped. It was 28-0 at halftime. I believe it was 35-0 at the end of three quarters. I mean, that was just – that was a boat race. But Lions are a different team. They're more further along in their whole process of becoming a perennial Super Bowl contender. They're a little more calloused and grown up. And, you know, we saw last week with how they treated Ben Johnson that they certainly remember, have short memories. They'll remember that game and how the Ravens treated them in that game. It's going to be a motivated team that arrives in Baltimore on Monday night looking to send a message that they're a legitimate Super Bowl team and forget their week one loss at Green Bay. So I think we're going to learn a lot about both teams on Monday night. It's a tough game. There's no question. We knew it would be. But after watching what the Lions did to the Packers the other day, to the Bears the other day, they're going to have their hands full in all three facets.
And they better be ready for the dogfight, because this is going to be a game of physicality. This is going to be an aggressive game from Dan Campbell in prime time. So when you're, you know, we kind of saw it, right? If they get down into third and two, got to remember it's going to be four down territory early and often. I think it's a big game for these defensive and offensive fronts. If they go out there and get bullied, it's going to start to, you know, really turn into WTF mode. But they have an opportunity to go out there, set the record straight, have a dominant performance against a good two units, you know, both the O-line and D-line for the Lions. And they come ready to play. They come ready to punch you in the mouth, because they know if they don't, Dan Campbell might put a helmet on and go out there and play center himself. So, you know, I'm excited for this one, but I love the title of the show. It's a big measuring stick game. It's only week three, so it feels weird to be having that conversation already, but it's more just what the Ravens have gone through 3 weeks. You look at their defense, you saw them kind of answer back, but can they do it against an elite unit that they just, you know, got beat up by in week one? So can they get right quick, you know? And it's the same thing with the O-line and D-line, particularly the O-line. Can they get right quick? And that's how I think they have to look at this and just stay dialed in. But they better be ready for a physical game, because again, these guys, the NFC North plays like the AFC North. It's physical football, and it's going to be, again, fourth down territory early and often, and they better be ready to shut down that run game of Gibbs and Montgomery.
Real quick, Bobby, we know how tight things get when they have to go to Kansas City or when they have to play Kansas City, period. We just know how that is. They're on a short week after this Lions game, having to go to Kansas City. They may not be the same old Chiefs, but they still have Mahomes, Kelsey, Spagnola, Andy Reid. You do not want to go into that game 1-2. You just don't. Because, as I said, we've all seen what Chiefs week is like. It hasn't necessarily brought out the best in the Ravens. Sure, maybe this is a different Ravens team. This certainly appears to be a different Chiefs team, but you just don't want to go in there at 1-2.
What? You got to go back to, what was it, 2021? September, October, last time they beat it. The only time they beat them.
And that was at home, yeah, the home. Yeah. It was that Sunday night game, I think, yeah.
Lamar flipping into the end zone. How could you forget it? But yeah, the quarterbacks here in Monday night, they've had a couple potent performances, a lot more than a couple. But look at what Goff and Lamar have done since 2024. They're the only quarterbacks with multiple games of 300-plus yards, 5-plus touchdowns, and no picks. So, you know, Goff, look, he may have been written off, right, in L.A. He has come to Detroit and made sure. What did Geno Smith used to say? They wrote me off, but I didn't write back. I think Goff can say that about his time in L.A. And so let's just get a closing thought on this, because you got to love a little bit of gamemanship right here going into the week. Malik Cunningham, of course, was brought in, what, 2023, Jeff? At this point, New England didn't want him. He was undrafted as a quarterback out of Louisville. And I believe his redshirt season as a Cardinal was Lamar's final season at Louisville before he leaves for the draft, of course, in 2018. And so these two have a relationship. Malik has shifted to wide receiver in recent years. And look who's bringing him into their practice squad, the Detroit Lions, as of earlier today. Jeff, I can only imagine what the Ravens were thinking of this move going in. But as we all know, there is no simulating Lamar Jackson. At least there isn't 8 years into this whole show.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody knows Lamar's record against NFC teams and teams that can't simulate some of the stuff he does with the speed and the ball control and the ball skills he has. It's just impossible. Malik Cunningham, you know, he's really close with Lamar. I'm sure they'll pick his brain a little bit, but I imagine the overriding thought from Detroit is let's get a dual threat type guy that can at least simulate what he can do. It's not an exact comparison, as we all know. So, I mean, I don't, you know, this is part of the game. Why wouldn't you do something like this to try to help you prepare for Lamar Jackson? You know, so these things kind of happen. It'll be interesting to see how long Malik Cunningham stays around in Detroit after this game. It may not be long, but, you know, he'll be a key player in their practices this week for sure.
There you have it. Couple more super chats. Sod Blitz answered our question earlier. My question that I floated out there. Harbs is 20-3 in home primetime games since 2008. And I'm sure Lamar is well, you know, he's obviously contributed to that stellar number. OJ writes, keep hustling, y'all. We love the content. Shout out Jay-Z. We appreciate you for holding us down. A little bit of love for you, Jeff. And the super chats are alive and well. Great membership and viewership tonight. I almost hit that 400 number, so thank you guys for continuing to show up and show out for us. Tuesdays, The Collective, 8 o'clock Eastern. And guys, a week from tonight, I expect a pretty big audience in here. It's Tuesday night after a Monday game, so we look forward to that coming up next week. Any closing thoughts from you guys? Are you all good?
I'm good.
I'm good, but I'll encourage our listeners as you wrap up here, go over and check out 410 Sports Talk. Go out and check out Jimmy and Glennie, two guys that we all love, and they'd love to have you over there. They usually stream at 9 right after us. The Tuesday night lineup, it reminds me of the old school TGIF. You know, you got Coach Evans doing Ravens Roundup. You had Spenny and Jake right before us doing the Exit 52 podcast. You got us at 8, and then you got 410 at 9. You know, you couldn't. The amount of Ravens content creation, I think, is just so great. There's so many diverse opinions. So go check out those other creators that I just mentioned. Go show them some love.
Love it. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate 410. Appreciate everybody for chiming in tonight, whether it was a live chat comment, a super chat comment, you name it. And if you could, on the way out, please like the video, subscribe, hit that notification bell. We'll be back a week from tonight. There's going to be a lot to talk about coming off week 3.